This country is at war with Germany.
Hallo zusammen und damit herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge Wunder, Wissen, Weltkrieg. Mein Name ist Raffaela Höfner. In jeder Folge spreche ich mit ehemaligen Soldaten, mit US-Veteranen, mit Überlebenden und Opfern des Zweiten Weltkriegs. Hört aus erster Hand die Erlebnisse, die Schrecken und Wunder, die meine Gäste selbst erlebt haben. Hier geht es um den Tatort Zweiter Weltkrieg, ein Podcast gegen das Vergessen und für den Frieden. April 24, 1944. Was war das? Ohrenbetäubender Lärm breitet sich wie ein Lauffeuer aus. Raus aus dem Maschinenraum, brüllt einer der Männer. Sofort lasse ich alles stehen und liegen und nehme immer zwei Stufen auf einmal nach oben. Ich muss es ans Deck schaffen. Wenn man einen Treffer bekommt, wird der Maschinenraum zu einem stählernen, glühenden Sarg. Salzige Meerluft peitscht mir ins Gesicht. Als ich den Kopf nach rechts drehe, kann ich den Aufschrei nicht mehr unterdrücken. Ein Torpedo zischt heran und erreicht unser Nachbarschiff. Mit voller Wucht explodiert er und zwingt mich in die Knie. Wo kam er her? U-Boote! Deutsche U-Boote! Höre ich Stimmen durcheinander schreien. Ein zweiter Torpedo schlägt ein. Dort, wo gerade noch ein Schiff war, klafft eine große, blutige Wunde. Ich kann nur zusehen, wie das gewaltige Wrack innerhalb von wenigen Minuten sinkt. Das Meer schluckt das, was gerade noch ein Schiff gewesen ist, mitsamt der Besatzung. Nebenan steht ein weiteres Boot in Flammen. Die Schreie der Kameraden an Bord ebben mir durch Mark und Bein. Irgendjemand muss ihnen doch helfen. Flammen ragen meterhoch in den Himmel. Diese Hitze, ich bekomme kaum noch Luft. Und sehe mit Entsetzen, wie das Wasser brennt. Ein heißer Teppich, wie frische Lava. Wie ist das nur möglich? Wo gibt es noch Schutz? Menschen, wie lebende Fackeln, stürzen sich nach unten. Schreie, überall Schreie, Wehklagen, Sterben. Mein Trommelfell klirrt. Schwarzer, beißender Rauch streicht über unser Schiff hinweg. Meine Augen brennen und ich sehe die Ruinen unserer Landungsboote nur noch durch einen Tränenschleier. Tote Körper reihen sich nebeneinander in den Fluten. Stahlsplitter prasseln nieder und ich kann mich gerade noch in Deckung bringen. Hilfeschreie aus dem Wasser. Hastig helfe ich, die Ketten herunterzulassen. Wie sollen wir all die Verwundeten an Deck bringen? Ein stöhnendes Bündel fällt neben mir auf den Boden. Kaum bin ich bei ihm, blicken die aufgerissenen Augen starr in den Nachthimmel. Der Mann ist tot. Auf zum Nächsten. Mit aller Kraft schleppe ich einen Kameraden ins Innere und hiefe ihn auf einen Tisch. Ich habe Mühe, ihn anzusehen und zwinge mich, ihm ins Gesicht zu blicken. Wo sind die Sanitäter? Die Finger des Mannes streichen über seine Brusttasche. Ich helfe ihm und ziehe ein schwarz-weißes Foto hervor. Eine Frau ist darauf zu sehen. Kinder. Seine Familie. Er ist tot, sagt der Mann neben mir, und ich starre vom Bild zu dem Toten. Sein rußgeschwärztes Gesicht wird bereits wächsern. Der Tod ist mir mit einem Schlag so nah wie nie zuvor. Der Krieg ist eine tödliche Maschine. Er beherrscht bereits die Elemente. Wir sind auf den Zufall angewiesen. Ich schließe die Augen und hoffe. Hoffe darauf, dass der nächste Torpedo unser Boot verfehlt. Hoffe, dass ich heil davonkomme. Ich hoffe auf ein Wunder. Ich bin erst 18 Jahre alt und nicht bereit, hier und jetzt zu sterben. In der heutigen Folge spreche ich mit dem US-Veteran George Saros. George wurde am 17. April 1925 in Chicago in den USA geboren. Mit nur 18 Jahren kommt er zur US-Army und arbeitet auf der LST-515 im Maschinenraum. Saros nahm an der Geheimmission Exercise Tiger im April 1944 teil. Dort trainierten die britischen und die US-amerikanischen Streitkräfte an den Slapton Sands im englischen Devon am Ärmelkanal die geplante Landung in der Normandie. Deutsche U-Boote torpedierten jedoch die Schiffe und versenkten 2 von 8 Landungsbooten in der Nacht, wobei etwa 946 US-Soldaten starben. George erlebte diesen Angriff hautnah mit. Am 6. Juni 1944 landet er mit seinem Schiff um 1 Uhr mittags am Omaha Beach in der Normandie. Dort findet er sich in einem Horrorfilm wieder. Viele von euch werden bestimmt den Film Der Soldat James Ryan kennen. Die Filmszenen lassen einen nur erahnen, was die Soldaten an diesem Tag durchmachen mussten. Maschinengewehrfeuer, feindlicher Beschuss, feindliche Flugzeuge. Das Meer war in wenigen Minuten blutrot gefärbt. Was weiter an diesem Tag passierte, der als D-Day Geschichte machte, lässt sich heute leicht in Zahlen fassen. Rund 6.000 alliierte Schiffe und Boote, 11.000 US-Flugzeuge, etwa 160.000 gelandete Soldaten, 40.000 Soldaten waren allein am härtesten umkämpften Strandabschnitt, dem Omaha Beach. Geschätzte 4.000 bis 6.000 tote Amerikaner, Briten und Kanadier. Ungezählte tote Deutsche. George Saros hat an diesem Tag mehr als nur ein Quäntchen Glück gehabt. Sein Schiff bringt die Verwundeten zurück nach England. Noch immer hört er die Schreie der Männer, die ihr Leben an diesem Tag verloren haben. George war bereits 2-mal wieder am Ort des Geschehens und plant erneut, den Kriegsschauplatz bald zu besuchen. Ich nehme euch jetzt mit in das Interview, damit ihr George Erzählungen aus erster Hand erfahren könnt. Mit dabei ist auch wieder Mike. Ihr kennt ihn bereits aus Folge 4 mit dem Bomberpiloten Ed Cottrell. Das nachfolgende Gespräch in dieser Folge ist auf Englisch. That's insane. Nice to meet you. So good that you took the time.
Yeah. It's nice of you to have me on. I sure appreciate that.
And I'm a writer. I write books about World War II, some novels, and 2 are already published, and the 3rd one's coming out next March.
Oh, George, you want to tell her about when the time is right, when he gets to the certain part of the story? George has got a book here called Exercise Tiger.
Exercise Tiger.
About something that happened before D-Day that he was involved in. And okay. He'll tell you that story.
Yeah, I'm really, really curious about that. Could you give me a brief biography of yourself?
She wants you to tell her about yourself. Where do you come from? Where were you born? Where you grew up? And yes. When did you join the Navy?
I was born in Chicago, Illinois, 1925. I went to Nash School. When I graduated from Nash School, I went to high school, Austin High School. On the last day of graduation, I was drafted by the Navy for the war.
Yeah.
I never finished my last 4 or 6 months of high school.
Yeah.
I was drafted and I went into the Navy. And I went to Farragut, Idaho for my basic training.
Did you like to join the Navy or was it could you choose where to go?
Yeah, I loved the Navy. Yeah, I was basically there. And then I got orders to go to to the East Coast.
Yeah.
Norfolk. And I was stationed there for about a month or two. And then I got notice to go to New Orleans, and that's where I picked up the ship, the LST-515. It was an amphibious ship, and it landed on the beaches. And the bow doors opened, and the ramp went down, and the soldiers got off and all the material. The ship was 350 feet long and 60 feet wide. We had about 125 people aboard ship.
That's a lot.
I worked in the engine room.
Yeah.
Okay. And my skipper, Captain Doyle, was regular Navy. And I worked in the engine room with 3 or 4 fellas in the engine room. So when we landed on the beach, we had to land on the beach. And then the bow doors opened. And the ramp went down, and then all the army could go out. And then we had to wait for the tide to come in. So then we had to pull off the beach. And there was a, what they used to, in the tail fin, they had a ramp, an anchor. Before we landed on the beach, we threw the anchor out in the back.
Yeah.
There. And so when we unloaded, then when the tide came in, then we started the motors, and then we had a motor on top with the anchor to pull us off the beach. That's how we operated. We made
which beach are you talking about? Omaha Beach?
Yeah, Omaha. Yeah. I hit all of them.
Okay.
Yeah, Omaha. Yeah, we made 62 trips across the channel.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
To France. Yeah.
Did you go from the States? Did you go to England first and then to Normandy?
Yeah. We were in Southampton in England. Where our base was.
Okay. Yeah. Did you know what's going to happen on June 6th? Did you guys on the boat know what's going to happen? Or were you just like going there into the blue?
No, we didn't know what. I know we were going to go to France.
Yeah.
But we didn't know what day. We were supposed to leave earlier, but the weather got bad. The ships couldn't do anything. So they decided to wait, and they decided on June 6th. That's when we were going over across the English Channel.
Yeah.
And I landed on the Normandy beach at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on the first day. Yeah.
That's really crazy.
But before that happened, on April 28, 1944, there were seven LSTs that were going to go and have a practice run on a beach in England. So 1 o'clock in the morning, we were called to general quarters. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. So I went up, I was stationed on a gun turret at that time. And then we were being attacked by German E-boats. So when I looked, there was one ship got hit with a torpedo. And then a couple minutes later, another ship got hit by a torpedo. And then another ship got hit by a torpedo. So my skipper says, we're going to go and pick up survivors. So we started to go and go pick up survivors. And then we got attacked by a German E-boat. And they attacked us. And they sent a torpedo after, and it missed us. But anyway, we picked up over 100 survivors. The water was 45 degrees cold. You couldn't stand. And they were just jumping off the ship. And the one ship just completely got, the one that got torpedoed, it sunk right away. And we lost all the guys in that ship.
That's unbelievable.
But we picked up over 100 of them. We stayed in the water for till about 6-7 o'clock in the morning. We've been picking up survivors. And then we brought them back. And then they couldn't talk about it. We couldn't talk anything about it. It had to be kept. So they didn't know anything about it until years later. Somebody wrote the book, this book here. Exercise Tiger. Can you see it?
Yes, I can see it. Why were you not able to talk about it? Was it not allowed to? Or?
Well, because we haven't made an attack on the beach yet.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so it was secret.
Took about 8 years, yeah.
When you think of that moment, does one single moment stand out for you, or one single moment that you can remember the most?
What's that?
When you remember this moment when the torpedoes hit, does one single moment stand out the most, which you can remember?
The one thing I remember?
Yeah, the one thing stands out the most about this night.
About the sailor you took into the mess hall.
Yeah. Well, I remember we picked up one soldier and we took him up in the mess room and put him on the table to see if we can revive him. And he was gone. So the officers told us, he says, I want you to go out and pick up all the dog tags so we know who got killed and that. So that's what we did. But we picked up over 100 survivors, and it was a miserable time for us.
Yeah.
Tell her about what you found in the man on the mess hall table, what you found in his pocket, his picture.
Yeah. We took out his wallet. He was laying on the table. He was completely gone. We pulled out his wallet, and we looked, and there was a picture of his wife and his children, and it just broke our hearts.
Yeah. That's really terrible.
Yeah. So it's been a long time.
You were so lucky that your boat didn't get hit or you didn't sink.
Yeah, we were lucky. And, you know, the water was cold. And I remember one of the fellas that I worked in the engine room, we could hear them screaming. And they were right by the ship. And one of our fellas went down the ladder to pick him up. And he grabbed a hold of him. And he was gone. And then there was another person there. He picked that fellow up, and we brought him up the top of the ship. But it was just terrible. It was screaming and yelling. And water was 45 degrees. The water was with fire all over the thing. And we lost those three ships. But The one ship that got hit by a torpedo was on the tail. And they saved that ship and they took it back to England and got it all fixed.
You guys saved it?
Well, the torpedo hit in the fantail, yeah, back of the ship. And she didn't sink. So after so many months, they poked it out and took her to England and put her in a dry dock and they repaired her.
You must have had a guardian angel.
Yeah, I think it was number 289.
Yeah. Do you notice a German U-boat before it, or just when the torpedo hits, or do you see it coming?
What? No, you couldn't see.
You couldn't see, just, there's just, no, okay.
When we were going to get attacked, our skipper on the top told us, hold your fire, don't shoot. We got him on the computer, and we waited and waited, and then the skipper gave us word to open fire, and we opened fire on him, and you couldn't see it, and then next thing you know, a torpedo went by our ship. But we survived, and we stayed there to pick up survivors. We didn't get back until 7, 8 o'clock in the morning.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
It's really crazy. Yeah. It's unbelievable what you've been through. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, D-Day, the first day, we hit the beach at 1 o'clock.
How did you spend the night before D-Day?
Huh?
How did you spend the night before D-Day when you knew something's gonna happen tomorrow?
Well, we were in England.
Yeah.
We were in England that time, and then we got orders to sail. We sailed early in the morning, and then we got over there, and our ship was between two. Battle wagon, big ships we were to. And then there was a transport ship right there. And they were loading the military on these small boats.
Yeah.
And they load them and then they'd go around in a circle until they all were loaded. Then they got the word to hit the beach and then they hit the beach. So we hit the beach about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And the thing I remember is, one of the German planes came down to attack us, But the next thing I know, there was an American plane right on top of them.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And then I could see, I looked up in the sky, and I saw all our big bombers going towards Germany and France. And then I saw one of our ships, one of our planes got hit, and the wing was all gone, and it was just going around like that. And they were just, we were yelling, bail out, bail out, bail out. And then we saw all the parachutes open up.
Oh, so they made it out the plane.
Yeah, they made it out, they landed, and they got it, yeah. Because I spent, from the time D-Day, I spent until the war ended over there.
How was it possible to get out the ship? Because the German machine guns were just, like, rattling. How was it possible to even get off the ship? Because the German machine guns were like...
Well, once they got the beach secured, then we had to open up the bow doors, and we had all the ambulance coming by, and we were taking all the wounded and putting them on the ship. But when we got loaded, then we'd go back to England and take them so they could get into the hospital.
Yeah.
That's what we did most of the time. And we did that as long as I was there. We made 62 trips across the English Channel. We had to worry about submarines. I remember going across back to England. We had a destroyer escort. And they thought they had a submarine, but they started sending depth charges over. And I didn't know what it was doing, but I was down the engine room, and when it exploded, I thought the ship got hit, and it wasn't. They were just sending depth charges. But that's all we did, back and forth to England, bringing supplies, bringing some wounded back to England.
Yeah.
And then the war ended, and then we went, and eventually we had enough. We went back to America.
Yeah, for me, it would be the worst part to be on the ship. I would be really scared on the water.
Yeah. It's surprising, though. Yeah. I didn't think about it. You know, when we left from Florida, we went all the way around to New York, to Canada. That's where we met all the ships.
Yeah.
We were loaded with nothing but ammunition. And we crossed the Atlantic Ocean with not even thinking about all the submarines that would be underneath. And we didn't even think about it.
That was better.
It didn't bother me until I got out of the Navy. And, you know, we went by icebergs and all that, and we had to stand watch and watch, you know, if there was any submarines in there. But we were young. We didn't know any better.
That was good. That's why war should be for young people.
Yeah. Anyway, that's about it. Huh? Yeah.
So you just went to the beach and you didn't get off the boat, right? You stayed on the boat and... Or did you get off? Yes, you stayed on the boat.
Yeah, I had liberty in England.
No, I mean on D-Day, that you didn't leave the boat.
No. We just stayed on the boat with D-Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And waited for the wounded to come in and to take them back to England.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wish I had a picture.
Yeah. Oh, that's
there's the ship.
That's a really big ship.
Yeah.
Unbelievable that a torpedo could sink it.
This is the crew.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see what else they got.
Did all your crew survive?
Huh?
Did your crew survive the war?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, we did. Some of the guys that we got off the ship, can you see that?
Yes, I like the uniforms.
Huh?
The uniforms look so smooth with the caps on and the hats.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
That's a really, really big ship. 160 people on it, you said, right?
Yeah, yeah. This was the skipper.
What's a skipper?
Yeah, he was the skipper of the ship.
Okay.
And this, see this guy here?
Yeah.
He was only 16 years old.
That's way too young to go to war.
Yeah. Anyway.
How old were you when you hit D-Day?
18.
That's too young as well.
Yeah. Anyway. That's about it, honey.
Did you experience a personal miracle at this time?
We were very lucky. We were very lucky, yeah. I mean, but that's a long time ago.
But must
it's
be
nice of you. It's nice of you to take all this stuff to teach the children.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think you always have to remember what happened, so something never happens again like this.
Yeah.
Have you ever been back to Europe after the war?
Yeah, I went back for the 75th anniversary of D-Day.
Okay, and to the Netherlands or to Normandy?
We went to France. Netherlands, I know. We didn't go to Netherlands.
She did go to the Normandy.
Yeah, we went to Normandy. And then that's when President of France was there, and President of the United States, Trump, was there.
Okay.
And I was sitting up there, and then they have the cemetery there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever been there?
I've been to the Netherlands in the cemetery.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, it was the 75th anniversary of D-Day.
Okay. Yeah. So you've been there.
We sailed. I flew over with another friend of mine on the ship. We flew over to, I can't think of the town, Tom and I.
Amsterdam, maybe?
Yeah. We flew to Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And from Amsterdam, we picked up this brand new cruise ship. And it was wonderful.
With no U-boats coming?
A lot of veterans with it. Yeah, we had a lot of fun. And then we just kept going down, all the way down to France and went to D-Day and all the beaches and all that. But we spent, we must have spent at least a week.
Yeah.
Visiting. And that was on the 75th anniversary of D-Day.
How do you spend June 6th now? Do you, like, I don't know, have a special thing to do on this day or to remember what happened?
Or do I remember what happened on D-Day?
No, how do you spend the day now on June 6th? Are you doing something special or?
The D-Day anniversary.
Huh?
She wants to know if you do something special to commemorate D-Day yourself whenever it comes on June the 6th.
Oh, and we go to the museum.
Okay.
The museum. Yeah,
we usually hold some kind of event.
Yeah.
Sometimes even a parade or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went to the Netherlands in May, and end of May, and the D-Day was coming. So
did you go?
Yes, because I met some veterans from the States, from New York, and I met them and went to the cemetery with them.
Well, that was good that you could do it. That's fun. And it's nice that you're doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I hope I helped you anyway.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to young people if you have to talk in front of a school class or something? What would you tell them with all your experience?
I'd just tell them to love their country and to serve their country, to be honorable, yeah. Because we live in a great country and you live in a great country too.
Thank you.
I've been to Norway.
Yeah. Oh, I've never been.
I've been to Norway. We took fiber ship, LST ships. We had Norwegian soldiers. And they said if they would join the United States Army, we would take them back home.
Okay.
And we sailed up the river there. It was beautiful. And there's this, what is it, the midnight sun?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the Northern Lights, right? They have them too in Norway.
Yeah, we spent about 3 or 4 days there. Yeah. That was it. And then we came out, and then we sailed back to America, and I landed in Virginia, Norfolk.
How did you experience the end of the war on May 8th? Where have you been there?
What?
Where have you been on May 8th when the war ended? Have you been already back to the States, or have you been still in Europe?
When the war ended in Europe, I was still in France.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you experience this day?
Huh?
How did you experience this day when the war ended? Or how did you get the notice? Yeah.
Did the skipper make an announcement that the war was over? Or yeah. How did you know?
They told us the war was over. We couldn't leave. Then the ships were leaving, going back, and we were one of the last ships to go back home.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we got back home. I went down to Cuba, and I spent about 3 or 4 months there, and I had enough points to finally I got out. When I got into Norfolk, Virginia, my brother was in a hospital there, and I went to visit him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was in the Coast Guard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
What has your brother done in war? Was he on...
No, he never... No, he was in the Coast Guard. He stayed mostly in America.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him. anyway. It's been nice talking to you. I hope I've helped you. Anything.
Yes.
George, tell her a little bit about what you did after the war. What was your job and your career?
In the Navy?
I was thinking of the post office.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I came home, I worked for the United States Post Office.
Okay, I thought you joined the Baywatch.
yeah.
So you worked, were in California and then?
Mostly in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you deliver the mail?
22 years.
The houses, or did you just sort the mail and then?
No, I went to houses. I had a Jeep.
Okay. Yeah.
Where do you live right now? Or which city?
I live in Flat Rock.
Okay, I've never heard of that.
Yes, no, it is. It's very small. But I was born in Chicago.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know that city. Do you know Munich? South of Do you know Munich, South Germany?
Munich, Germany is where she's from.
You're from Munich, no. But I have a good friend. His name is Hans Ruschmann. He was from Germany.
Yeah.
He came to America. And at that time, they were still drafting. So he got drafted.
Yeah, as an American soldier.
He got married. He spoke mostly German, very little English. And he met a young lady in New York, and they got married. So his orders came that he was going to go back to Germany for 2 years.
Yeah.
So he's going back to his homeland. Yeah.
And he never returned.
No, he finally came back to America and lived in America. Yeah. We become real good friends because we belong to the same church.
Okay.
His name was Hans Ruschmann. He lost his wife about a year ago.
Okay.
And on April 17th is my birthday. My friend died that day. I saw him in the hospital. He died.
On your birthday?
He died on my birthday. That's he was a crazy. Wonderful man. He was just a wonderful man. Yeah. It's great to call him my friend. Anyway, but he was originally from Germany. He told me a story. He would have liked Hans. He was such a nice guy. Yeah. Anyway, what else can I tell you? I don't know.
I don't know. If you could describe the war in a few words, which words would you choose?
Which war would I choose?
Yeah, words. when you have to describe what is war, what's your experience?
It was terrible. When I saw those ships getting torpedoed, I didn't know whether we were going to make it at all. Yeah. And my skipper said, we're going to go pick up Survivor. And you couldn't see a hand in front of you. And then as we were going, and then the word came down, don't fire, don't fire. We'll let you know when to fire. We waited and waited until they said it was 3/4 in, then a half a mile, and it got close, and then they said open fire. Then we opened fire.
Yeah.
And then they claimed that a torpedo went by, and I didn't see it, but it went by the bow.
Did you hear it?
And that was it. It didn't hit us, no. It missed us.
What's it like if a torpedo hits you? Is it just like a bombing or a shell or is it fire?
It's terrible.
Is it like a shell exploding?
It just, everything goes. The one ship, the second ship that got hit, she got two torpedoes. I don't think they ever got any survivors off that ship because it sunk so fast.
What?
And I remember them screaming. The guys were screaming. And they were jumping in the water. And the fire was on the water. And it was 45 degrees temperature. So finally the skipper says, we lowered our boats, the small boats. And we had the guys on there. And they went over and start picking them up and putting them in the small boat. Then they would come around by the LST when the bow was open and the ramp was down. And then we would take them off the boats and bring them into the tank. Then they would go out and pick as many else as they could. Finally, the English Navy came and our Navy came. Because we didn't get out of there until 7, 8 o'clock in the morning.
What's a skipper? What is a skipper? Sorry, I don't know the term.
The skipper got off, yeah.
The captain of your ship?
Yeah, we were all right because we didn't get hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell them about... They ordered your skipper to leave, to go back, but he refused.
Yeah. Our skipper, we had a commander aboard our ship. And see, there were eight of us.
Ships.
And the commander was the commander of all these ships. So you had to obey him. So when the torpedoes hit and the ships were blown up, the commander says, all of you, you must hit the beach. You mustn't go there. And Captain Doyle said, no, we're going to pick up survivors.
Yeah.
He went against orders. That's what he did. We didn't know this.
Yeah.
So that's when he said, we're going to go pick up survivors.
Did he get in trouble after?
No, I don't think he did, but he never got accommodation either.
Yeah.
He should have got accommodation.
Yeah, he disobeyed orders to save lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He disobeyed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good that he disobeyed. It's more important to save a life.
Yeah.
Is his story in that book, George? Exercise Tiger. And if you're able to get it in Germany, it may be out of print now. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Was the mission called Exercise Tiger? Always a title. Yeah.
And the beach in England where they were practicing was called Slapton Sands.
Yeah.
And what was the town they evacuated, George?
Slapton Sands, the town.
The town?
That was it. Yeah.
They took all the British civilians away because they wanted to keep this a secret to practice the landing.
Oh, okay.
The landing on Slapton Sands was like the beaches in Normandy.
Okay, so you can practice first.
So we were supposed to go there, but at 1 o'clock in the morning, that's when we got attacked.
Yeah.
By the German E-boat. Yeah.
When you see the scenes of the D-Day, I can't believe how any soldier even entered the beach because the machine guns were so dangerous and they just shot out of holes. And I couldn't imagine to get out of the boat. I would be too scared.
Well, I was sitting, our ship was in the water before we landed, and there was a big battleship over here. I forget what there is. Was a battleship over here and a battleship over here. And all they're doing was pounding the beach, shooting at the beach and all. And then when they hit, then they stopped, then they hit the beach.
Yeah.
But they hit the beach. They hit the beach real early in the morning. The paratroopers dropped it at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
Whoa.
And I remember when we were on the beach, we picked up some of the air paratroopers.
Yeah.
And we took them back to England with us. But they had a rough time too.
I heard so many people drowned that day because the water was the heavy clothes and you couldn't get up in the water.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah, because they had, And then, of course, when they were hitting the beach, there were nothing but mines on the water. And they used to have a ship that used to, a mine used to go by with a big long hole line to hit the bombs and blow them up so they could clear the beach. But a lot of them before, like you say, hit the beach, they never made it at all.
Yeah.
It was suicide, that's for sure.
Was it possible to use tanks on the beach, or did they not roll?
Well, they had tanks and everything, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did you guys bring some tanks from the boats, or was it too heavy to bring them?
No, I don't know whether we had anything. We had mostly transportation engineers.
Trucks and jeeps.
Yeah. But you know what, when the war was going on in the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
Battle of the Bulge. It was so bad. When we were in England, we picked up a whole crew of soldiers. They were all brand new. You could just see the number. We were taking them to France that they were going to go fight in the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
And they were young. They were young like I was.
Yeah.
18 years old. That's what they were. You could see the numbers. They were all brand new, new helmets and all that.
Yeah, I've heard of the battle. It must be so low temperature, so it was so hard fighting with -25 degrees or something.
Cold.
Yeah. Snowy and
muddy. As we were back on the beaches, the other thing you did was bring wounded soldiers and ambulances back to England. Is that?
Yeah.
So tell her about that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's in here.
Do you remember picking up wounded people?
Yeah. There's a picture there where there's nothing but on the beach with ambulance, and all the ships were there.
Yeah.
This is the beach. And their ships were there, and the ambulance were just coming up by the ships, and we were taking the wounded off and putting them on the ship and then taking them back to England to the hospital.
Did the Germans shoot on the ambulance boats?
No, not to that. No, I didn't see that.
Okay, that's good, though.
Yeah, no.
So you've been to med school, or how did you do the medical support? Or did you have some med training so you could help the wounded?
Medical training. But you didn't do that. You were down in the engine room, right?
Yeah. No, we have medics that happened because I used to work in the engine room.
Yeah.
But when this was all going up, I had to go topside because I was on a gun with two other fellows. There were three of us on the gun. But after it was all over, we tried to pick all of them up as much as we could, bring them on the ship, get them comfortable. I remember my Navy blanket. I liked my Navy blanket. It was nice, nice. And we had to give it to the Army guys that were all
in the war, right?
So we wound up with Army blankets. Anyway.
Yeah, my grandfather. Pardon, my grandfather. He was born 1917, and he was a doctor. He finished university 1942, and 2 months later they sent him to Russia to the Eastern Front to be a doctor there. So he had no.
Russia was terrible.
Yeah, he told us so. He was close to Stalingrad. His group was supposed to free the 6th Army out of Stalingrad in February.
Yeah.
And his commander...
Did he still live?
No, he passed away 2010.
Oh.
And my
sorry to hear that.
My other grandfather, he was born 1921. And he was a signaler. He was fighting in the Battle of Berlin. And he got captured by the Russians. And he fled the camp, like the prisoner's camp, a few years later. And he told how the Russians treated the people in Berlin.
They were terrible.
Yeah.
They were terrible. Yeah. Yeah.
Because another veteran I interviewed, he told me he was experiencing the end of the war at the Elbe River. And he said the Americans were coming from the west and the Russians from the east. And all German soldiers jumped in the Elbe River to try to swim to the Americans so they don't get imprisoned by the Russians.
Yeah, that's the story, that the Germans didn't want to be captured by the Russians.
Yeah.
They'd rather be captured by the Americans. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my other grandfather, he was lucky. He was a doctor, so he didn't get imprisoned. He was working for the Americans then in the hospitals.
It's nice what you're doing to teach the children about the war.
Yeah.
That's very nice of you to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, they're really interested. I had my 7th graders last year, and now they get into the 8th grade. And they really want to know everything about my interviews and my books.
Yeah. When I went back for the 75th anniversary of D-Day, we went to grammar schools.
To the little ones.
And I'll tell you, it was wonderful. Those little kids just came over to you. They wanted to take pictures of you. They wanted you to sign this and that, you know. They just mushed around you. So then my friend that was pushing me on the wheelchair, he said, well, George, we got to go. We got to get back on the ship. So I said to all the little kids, just get together. So I took a picture of them. They were delightful.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The kids are great.
That's a long time ago.
Now we have the war in Europe, so the war is like up to date, because I have some kids in my class from Ukraine, and their dads are fighting now in the Ukraine against the Russians.
Yeah, that's a terrible war going on. I feel sorry for the Ukrainian people.
Yeah.
Having a hard time. They're losing their country and their homes are destroyed. They don't have any food or water.
Well, that shows again that war's always terrible for everybody involved. Well, thank you so much, George, for taking your time and talking to us. And yeah, we really appreciate it. So you guys have a good day. Thank you so much. History Wissen. Exercise Tiger. Die Exercise Tiger war ein während des Zweiten Weltkriegs an den Slapton Sands im englischen Devon am Ärmelkanal durchgeführtes gemeinsames Militärmanöver von britischen und US-amerikanischen Streitkräften. Hier trainierten alliierte Truppen abschließend Ende 1944 im April die Landung in der Normandie. Deshalb wurde die Operation bis August 1944 geheim gehalten. Kommunikations- und Koordinationsprobleme führten leider zu einem ersten Unglück. Die britische Marine beschoss, nachdem der Zeitpunkt der Landung verschoben worden war, zu früh gelandete US-amerikanische Soldaten am Morgen des 27. April am Zielort Slapton Sands. Weit verheerender war ein Angriff von 9 deutschen Schnellbooten unter dem Kommando von Bernd Klug. Sie versenkten in der Nacht vom 27. auf den 28. April 2 von 8 Landungsbooten der zweiten Welle auf See im Gebiet von Line Bay und beschädigten ein weiteres, wobei 946 US-Soldaten starben. Ende 1943 beschloss die britische Regierung, Trainingsorte für den D-Day einzurichten und bestimmte dafür unter anderem den Slapton Sands, einen Strand zwischen den Dörfern Towcross und Slapton in der Grafschaft Devon. Die US-amerikanischen Kräfte, die am Strandabschnitt Utah Beach landen sollten, nahmen dort an Übungen teil, da dieser den Bedingungen des Utah Beach sehr ähnelte. Ein bekiester Sand, auf den ein Landstreifen und dann ein See folgt. Die ca. 3000 Einwohner der Gegend um Slapton wurden dafür umgesiedelt. Die Landeübungen begannen im Dezember 1943. Exercise Tiger selbst war eine abschließende sehr große Übung. Die Übung beinhaltete alle Aspekte der echten Landung. Hierbei sollten 2 Brückenköpfe geschaffen und gehalten werden. Insgesamt nahmen mit den Seelandetruppen zusammen 25.000 Soldaten und 2.750 Fahrzeuge am Landungsmanöver Tiger teil. Bei der Landung sollte über die Köpfe der Soldaten hinweg mit echter Munition geschossen werden. Die Idee war, dass sich die Soldaten an den Lärm und an den Geruch des Krieges gewöhnen sollten. Dies war auf einen direkten Befehl von Dwight D. Eisenhower zurückzuführen, der seine Männer abhärten wollte. Am frühen Morgen des 28. April griffen unter dem Kommando von Korvettenkapitän Bernd Klug deutsche Schnellboote an. Ihnen war der rege Funkverkehr aufgefallen und sie hatten schließlich den Konvoi gesichtet. Die Schnellboote griffen zwischen 1.30 Uhr und 2 Uhr morgens an und versenkten zwei LSTs. Die LST 507 wurde mit Torpedos attackiert und dann in Brand geschossen. Die LST 531 wurde getroffen und brannte ebenfalls. Beide sanken. Die LST 511 wurde zweimal von Torpedos getroffen. Diese explodierten aber nicht. Die anderen LSTs gingen auf volle Fahrt und flohen so vor einem weiteren Angriff. Die LST 515 kehrte nach Armeeberichten um und rettete einige Überlebende. Auf diesem Schiff befand sich George Saros. Eine vollständige Opferliste gibt es nicht, aber die Aufzeichnungen berichten von mindestens 749 Toten und mehr als 300 teils schwer verwundeten Männern. Der Vorfall wurde geheim gehalten und alle Zeugen zum Schutz der bevorstehenden Landung in der Normandie zu Stillschweigen ermahnt. Nach dem deutschen Angriff wurden allerdings 10 alliierte Geheimnisträger vermisst. Diese waren aber über die genauen Invasionspläne informiert und da man von alliierter Seite befürchtete, einige könnten gefangen genommen und erfolgreich verhört worden sein, griff man zu einigen Maßnahmen, um die Operation in der Normandie weiter abzusichern. Die Landungsabschnitte in der Normandie wurden hinsichtlich deutscher Truppenverstärkung genau beobachtet und Aktivitäten rund um den Pas-de-Calais wurden verstärkt, um die Irrtumswahrscheinlichkeit bei den Deutschen zu erhöhen, die Invasion würde dort erfolgen. Die 10 ertrunkenen Offiziere konnten entgegen einiger Wahrscheinlichkeit bei einer aufwendigen Suche nach den Opfern gefunden werden. Anschließend wurden zahlreiche Änderungen eingeführt. Es gab zum Beispiel einheitliche Frequenzen, verbesserte Rettungswesten und verbesserte Rettungsmöglichkeiten für über Bord gegangene Soldaten. Erst im August 1944 wurden die genauen Opferzahlen veröffentlicht. George Saros hat nach dem Krieg für die amerikanische Post gearbeitet. Regelmäßig besucht er Schulen, um die junge Generation über den Zweiten Weltkrieg aufzuklären und seine Erlebnisse zu schildern. Bereits zweimal ist er an den Ort in der Normandie zurückgereist, der sein Leben für immer geprägt hat. Ich finde es immer wieder unglaublich, wie Menschen, die das Schlimmste gesehen haben, wieder in ein normales Leben zurückkehren können. George ist es sehr wichtig, dass so etwas nie wieder geschieht. Noch heute kann er sich vor allem an den einen Soldaten erinnern, der auf dem Tisch gestorben ist. Er hat damals seine Frau und seine Kinder auf dem Foto gesehen. Seine Geschichte zeigt vor allem, wie wichtig es ist, manchmal das Glück auf seiner Seite zu haben. Auch er hatte leicht von einer Kugel getroffen werden können. Stattdessen durfte er überleben und zurück in die Staaten reisen. Dort hat George eine Familie gegründet. Viele andere seiner Kameraden war dies nicht vergönnt. Sie verloren, wie viele andere, ihr Leben am Omaha Beach. Mit seinen fast 98 Jahren ist George sehr fit und engagiert sich im Weltkriegsmuseum in North Carolina. Regelmäßig besucht er dort Veranstaltungen und berichtet von seiner Vergangenheit. Ich bin sehr dankbar, dass George mir seine Geschichte erzählt hat. Wenn auch du dir seine Geschichte angehört hast, bist auch du einer dieser Zeitzeugen, die dazu beitragen, dass die Vergangenheit nicht in Vergessenheit gerät. Ich würde mich sehr freuen, wenn du dem Podcast eine positive Bewertung hinterlässt und ihn deiner Familie und deinen Freunden weiterempfiehlst. Auch würde ich mich freuen, wenn du das nächste Mal wieder mit dabei bist, wenn es heißt Wunder, Wissen, Weltkrieg.